Welcome to episode 23 of Old Stories, New Information. I'm your host, Brent Colley. And on today's episode, I am joined by Susan Boone Durkin, a very talented artist, historian, and the owner of 23 Mark Twain Lane, a.k.a. The Lobster Pot. Because, of course, I'm going to tie in my 23rd episode with Mark Twain on the 114th anniversary of his passing in Reading, and include the best person that I know to talk about that. So, Susan, thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
So how did you end up at the epicenter, really, of Mark Twain's Reading?
I think it was meant to be. 39 years I've lived here, and as Mark Twain said, life is a chain of 10,000 links. And certainly this has held true since I've lived here at the Lobster Pot. I think it was meant to be. Early in my career, before I could support myself painting portraits, I had to get into real estate. I thought that would be the best thing for me with my personality. And one of my first sales was this large property which had two houses on it. One was a Lobster Pot, and the other one was the carriage house to the Lobster Pot, which had been converted into a house. The owner who purchased the property didn't want the Lobster Pot property, so I made him an offer. And he took it, and there you go. It was just amazing. The property, you know, sits atop of a hill with 200 and some odd acres of protected land around it, and road, quiet and peaceful. And it has a sunken garden. How could he get the sunken garden? Again, this is all that Mark Twain kismet stuff. When I was growing up, my mom had a big sunken garden. My great aunt had a huge sunken garden. How many people have sunken gardens? Well, I have an 80-foot sunken garden.
No, it's beautiful, and that's really what you look out from the house, the back of the house, looking back towards Diamond Hill Road, and it works perfectly. I think it's interesting, though, that the other person took the carriage house and you got the Lobster Pot. That's really cool. But, yeah, your sunken gardens are a huge draw, especially, like, as we head into this time of year, because they really come into play. Why is it called the Lobster Pot? What's the history?
Oh, this is it's quite colorful, as anything that Mark Twain's involved in is. Originally, it was a 1720 saltbox that belonged to the Meeker family. They had a mill around the corner and many houses in this area are Meeker houses. When Twain bought it in 1906, under the encouragement of his a biographer, Albert Bigelow Payne, who lived nearby, he bought it with 248 acres, and he built his last home, Stormfield, on the acreage. And that's actually where he died in 1910. The Lobster Pot, when Twain bought it, was pretty run down. It sort of looks abandoned. And he gave the Lobster Pot to Isabel Lyon, who was his secretary, social companion, and household manager, and a bit more than that, too. As a gift, he gave it to her as a gift for her hard work, and then he gave her some money to fix it up. Isabel loved the property. She called the Lobster Pot her darling little house. And even though she lived with Twain up at Stormfield most of the time, it did become a destination for the angelfish. So that ties into how it got its name. The angelfish were a bunch of young girls who were pen pals and daughters of some of Mark Twain's friends. Obviously, they were of high society, and he considered them surrogate grandchildren, and they would come to visit him at Stormfield. And at Stormfield, he had fish themes for that room. So the kitchen was the fish market, the loggia was the aquarium, and the billiard room was the official angelfish headquarters. So they would walk down to the Lobster Pot. And may I also add that he used to love to walk the fields, too. You know, so when he lived here, you could just look at you could look forever, you know, because there's no trees. So if you came to the rough spot today, if you looked out across the field going south, you'd look right at Stonefield. And in fact, Twain had in his bedroom set up his bed angled so when he laid it in his bed, he could look right at the lobster pot.
Yeah, and that's great. That's the thing, like, because like when you look at the old pictures of his bed, it just seems like a weird position.
Yeah,
it's like kind of wedged between like his bathroom and a closet and the door that enters. And until you understand that the window was there, then you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense, because there was no trees between there and your house, and so it must have been a pretty nice view. That time. And you're right, like that. I mean, when I John Cooley was the guy who did all the letters from the Angelfish, and that was kind of like where I got excited about him coming to Reading, was the excitement between him and them about, like, I'm moving from the city into the, you know, basically the country. And
yeah. And then let's see. So then what happened, like, in 1909, Mark, just getting back to the history, Mark Twain and Israel Lyon had a falling out. And he took the lobster pot back. Then in 1953, the lobster pot burned, and it was rebuilt on the same foundation. And even the patio, which Twain paid to have made when Isabel owned it, it's woven right into it. So it's wonderful to be able to sit on, we call it Twain's patio, and just look at all the gardens.
It's great. So, I mean, from all the old pictures, it's really neat that it is just the way that it was back then. And, you know, you found so many great pictures of it with, like, my favorite is when Ashcroft, you know, her husband, really, has a hammer and a cup of coffee in his hand, like, looking out into what your gardens are now.
Yeah, I know.
It's really kind of, like, awesome. And, like, yeah. So what is it like to live on, like, a property that Mark Twain once owned?
It's been 39 years of heaven, I have to tell you. You know, as I said, it's so private and peaceful. It's magical. I feel a presence. I really do. I don't know if it's Twain or Isabella, but I do. I feel the property has a very positive, happy energy. And for me to be able to work in my studio and then look out on the gardens and then take a break and walk out to the gardens and just hear the birds, just exhale. It's really a source of inspiration, and you know, it's kismet. I feel I was meant to be here. You know, it's like everything that Mark Twain said. Everything's linked together. When Twain came here the first time to Stormfield was June 18th, 1908. That's my husband's birthday. That was Mark Twain's birthday, mother's birthday, and it just. Everything's just magical.
That's crazy, because I was thinking about, you know, episode 23, and for some reason I was like, I'm pretty sure that Susan lives at 23 Mark Twain Lane, but I'm not sure, but I don't care. Like, we're just going to do this, and then as it turns out, that's true. And so you're right, and that's, like, the beauty of it, because everyone kind of laughs at us. We started as, like, a trio. It was me, you, and Heather Morgan, who was the director at the Mark Twain Library, in trying to promote the anniversaries of Twain's arrival and his passing and about a bunch of other stuff. And so we got kind of called Twainiacs, which is, like, maniac plus Twain. And I like it. And what we were able to accomplish was we were able to get a lot of scholars and writers and anyone who was interested in Mark Twain to Reading. And I think that's something that's special, because not many people really recognized his time in Reading until we really kind of put the spotlight on it.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And that's another thing, too, you know, getting to the scholars about living here on the property is, you know, when I moved in here, you know, I knew about Twain, and I love frogs. He loved frogs. I love cats. One time I had 9 cats. He loved cats. You know, and then as time went on, I, as you mentioned, started to become a Twainiac. It was almost like I was being covered with this passion for Twain and talking Twain. And Wayneisms, and it got to the point my husband said, I better come on now. But then, consequently, you know, whether it was, I started to have these scholars. I've had scholars from all over the country, writers and scholars, some even from Europe, that want to come here, and they want to come to the Lobster Pot. They want, of course, they want to see Stormfield, but they want to come to the Lobster Pot. And, like, for instance, about 4 years ago, Ron Chernow, he's the well-known writer who did wrote the play Hamilton and the book Hamilton, and he also did a book on Washington, Rockefeller, Ulysses Grant. He came to the Lobster Pot to talk Twain. And I gave him a tour of some of the Twain sites in Reading. And when we were driving around, I said to him, did you ever think about, because he's writing a book, I should say, he's writing a book about Twain's last years. And I said to him, did you ever think that Twain was so complicated? And he said to me, of all the people I've written about, he's in a whole other league as far as his you know, personality and his complexity.
No, it's true. But and like all of that came together right there, you know, in Reading. Like it was so, he was so complicated, and he really needed the help of others to basically succeed, because he was a danger to himself in a lot of ways. And I think that that's why I like the fact that you're there, because you have kind of become the hub of a wheel that was the center of his world. Because, you know, Rob's house is just down the way. That was Markland. And just up the hill, it's gone now, but that was Albert Bigelow Paine. I mean, the whole reason why he really came to Reading was because Albert couldn't really get the information or the focus for the biography that Mark Twain really wanted, that biography. And he couldn't get it in New York because he was such the extrovert that he just couldn't find the time to get the information necessary to pull it all together. And, like, if you look at the volumes that the Mark Twain Project out in Berkeley has, they're mammoth. I have three books that are so thick, like, it's, and this is, we're not done yet. But that's a thing, like, and it's, it, he was so complicated, but everyone who lives in your neighborhood has been very good about sharing it because they know the importance. I think, you know, Jake and Erica are gone, but they were so good in the industries about helping to, you know, get access to, you know, it's not obviously the house that was there, but it's on the same property, just like you. And it was fun. Like, it was so great to have people visit and their interest. And then what you put together, you know, as far as Mark Twain's Reading, that, you know, beautiful poster board, I guess is the best word for it, really works well. I was just down at the Mark Twain Library earlier this month for the neighbors and newcomers. And we're handing those things out, people just moving here and not aware, but now they are aware. So it's cool. But so in terms of you and Twain, like, what have you learned since you moved there about him?
Well, one thing, the admiration. I mean, he was totally amazing. He dedicated his life through his humor to make people better, hopefully to make people better, humanity better. I just didn't know how complicated he was. I didn't know how brilliant he was, how much wit and conviction. He was the first superstar. I also, you know, found out that he was almost sometimes like two people. There was Mark Twain, and then there was Samuel Clemens. And, you know, getting back to Isabel Lyon and the Lobster Pot, too, because of her living here, and she gave her diary. She lived with, I think it was 8 years with the Clemens family, and she kept a diary of everything that went on, and particularly when he moved to Stormfield, when she was there with him, she wrote down everything that went on. And I think that adds to the scholars, too, recognizing the Lobster Pot, because of her diary and the photos that she gave to Berkeley. They weren't actually released to the public until 1965 when Clara died. And there's a lot of information that's come out, so I think it's put the lobster pot on the map. And then Hal Holbrook said, if it hadn't been for Isabel Lyon, his presentation of Mark Twain would never have been true. He met with Isabel many, many times, and she had him promise to her that what is said behind these doors never goes outside. And he is quoted by saying, my rendition of Twain is true because of Isabel Lyon, because she lived with him. She knew how he talked, how he walked, how he thought.
Yeah, she was with him.
But at times I've had to take my Twain hat off because, you know, it can be all-consuming, as you know. And so I just learned, you know, that he's just amazing. And we are so lucky as Americans to have him in our history.
No, and also, like, you and your property, like, you've actually had a movie filmed on your property.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for them to do the film about Mark Twain and Isabel, because it's just so juicy. No, he used to come into her, well, of course, her bedroom was next to his at Stormfield, and he used to come into her bedroom in his underwear.
Yeah, it was like that whole comfort level. Like, she kind of took over when Livy passed away, really and truly.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
she did.
And he needed a handler, and she was it. And
yep.
She was very good at what she did.
Yep, absolutely. Even though she had a couple of nervous breakdowns dealing with it, but she,
most women who dealt with him did.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So,
yeah.
I mean, as far as, like, with you, like, I like to tie in with, obviously, the house and everything you guys have done to it. You know, Terry has done a great job with the house, and I love the fact that your studio is the Lobster Pot Studio, and you've done great work in bringing people onto the property. My kids, when they were young, loved all the frogs hidden all over the property.
Yeah.
you have such a connection to the whole story because you have that picture in your, you know, great room with your dad and Dan Beard.
I know, isn't that amazing? Again,
yeah, that's
amazing. Yeah, so what happened is I, you know, there were a lot of Twain. There's like a Twain historic district, like around. I mean, not official historic, but there were so many houses that tie into Twain. And again, this is that kismet with Twain. Is that okay? My parents in 1976 they purchased Dan Beard's house. But the thing is, my father, in 1936, my father met Dan Beard at a Camp 5 America gun shooting jamboree. My father won a lot of the awards. He was only 11 years old.
Huh.
But the man who was giving out the awards was Dan Beard. He was 94 at the time. And then 40 years later, my parents bought his house right around the corner. I mean, it's just amazing.
I have that great picture. It is. I mean, you think about it. Like, you lived there. Like, that was attached to the Adams property. They were the ones that gave the land that made the Mark Twain Library. And then you do the beautiful portrait of Jean, his daughter, you know, and that hangs in the Mark Twain Library, and you captured her perfectly. I think you capture people better than any portrait artist that I am aware of, because you capture something in their eyes. It's just it's what you do with the eyes is magical.
Oh, well, thank you. That means a lot to me. The eyes show the light. They bring a portrait alive, and it engages you to you're connected to the person when you look in their eyes, and they look back at you. As long as you don't drink too much and they start blinking at you, that would be good.
No, but it's really neat because, like, she has been such a, like, you know, her property, obviously, he in addition to his properties, everything is attached to the Running Land Trust's properties. And I think that's something that people don't really realize. I mean, originally, with all the purchases, and this happened over the course of, a number of years. At one point, he had 320 acres in Redding, and then that got whittled down to, 268-ish. We have 161 acres of open land. You know that because you run the trails probably every day. And, attached to it was the property that we knew as the Hermes. But that was Jean's farm. And so he, when she came, purchased a farm for her, and she was a big part of the community in that time frame. And then when she tragically passed, that property was sold to basically fund the library. So the real name of the library is not the Mark Twain Library. It's the Jean L. Clemens Memorial Library. And you put that portrait there, and she looks over the middle of that library, and how you did that portrait looks like she's so proud. And I think that's something that people may not know about, but they should. I do. I think that's special because she overlooks the area of the art show. The Hermes owned her house. And they are a big part of why the library there is able to do what they do. And I think that's really neat.
I know. So it's amazing because, getting back to that whole circle with things linked together, one of the last things that Twain did was he sold the library, Jean's farm, after she died, to the funds to build the library. And then when the Hermes bought Jean's farm, then they sold it with funds to go back to the new addition of the library. So then that's another circle. And then now, I don't know if you know that, it has been two different parcels, Jean's Farms. It's been where the Hermes lived, the house, and then there was another lot with a house on it. Well, it's all one property back again. All of Jean's Farm, what Hermes had, is all one owned by the same person again.
No, it's totally, you can't make it up. And people question why it was called Stormfield and why all the names changed. I remember just above Jean's farm, I was mountain biking. You're not supposed to, but I did. And I had the worst thunderstorm of my life. I had, clip-ins, so I had metal on my feet, and I was under a tree thinking I'm going to die. And I was like, wow, this is a Stormfield. And so there's, always those connections and realizations. And we learn more. Literally, every single year. And I think this year being the 114th, anniversary of his passing, he had been quoted, his death is exaggerated, but it's not. He's always relevant.
Yeah, he certainly is. It's amazing. First superstar.
It's cool. And I love what you do because you keep him alive, and, I'm happy to keep him alive, too. And,
do a lot more than I do, Brent. You are so wonderful and so devoted to Twain and sharing your wealth of knowledge.
Well, that's the thing about history. You have to share. When you stop sharing, it goes away. And that's pretty much my purpose, is to continue to share the stories that others told me as I was growing up. So, we're running out of time, but Susan, as always, it's always been wonderful to talk to you and share your knowledge. And obviously, we'll be talking soon after this.
Okay.
Thank you for being here on the 23rd episode. That means a lot to me.
My pleasure.
All right. So as we've noted in all episodes, there's an email account. Write to us, stories@robinhoodradio.com, and tell us what you want to know more about. So we'll circle back on those comments. So until next time, be well and always do right. This will gratify some people and astonish the rest. Enjoy your week.
Old Stories, New Information with Brent Colley is produced at the studios of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.